This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. One of the big factors in any election is how the voters feel, especially when it comes to the direction of the country and how it's going to affect them personally. As the 2016 presidential election gets closer, voters are anxious, frustrated, and in some cases, angry. To gauge the mood in Cincinnati, WVXU News Director Marianne Zalesnik went downtown to hear what some local voters had to say about the state of politics during this year's election.
What do you think the tone of the election is?
Well, I think it's, you know, pretty divisive. I think it's been pretty divisive since, you know, the past, 12, 16 years, every election cycle.
It's almost a caricature of what politics should be, I think. It's not, I think, what politics really should look like. It's way too polarized. It's not focused on the issues.
I think the Republican debates have totally gotten out of control and off point with Donald Trump.
It's almost like a reality show, and it seems to be a lot of people pretending what they want, like acting in a way of like, this is what we think people are going to want. That's why I think transparency is really important, because someone like Hillary, who I liked in the beginning, seems like she's just playing along with what people want, which is just awkward and clumsy.
Is there one overriding issue that you want the candidates to talk about?
Essentially where the economy is headed, you know. Growth has been pretty stagnant at the moment, and, you know, I'd like to see some sort of candidate address that issue. And hopefully we can see wages, you know, grow in the next few years, you know. I think that's probably the most important thing. And then also healthcare, making sure that we have all the, you know, people getting access to healthcare that we can. Finally, the other really important issue, I think, is the environment.
The only thing I worry about is the Obamacare. I don't want that repealed.
Just generally, human rights is something that's important, I think.
For me, I think one of the bigger ones is about debt and what we spend our money on and how we spend our money, and that we as a nation just can't keep spending money that we don't have.
I think maintaining health care is important to me. Women's rights and from income disparities as well as from health care disparities for women. It's important to me.
I'm really heartbroken about our schools because I have a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they can't cursey write. They don't know how to sign their signature because they snatched it out of the schools.
The big one for me is education and student debt reform, because it's crippling the millennials and it's not fair. Basically, I mean, I know a lot of people are like, oh my God, millennials complain so much, but that's just, sorry, I know,
it's
I can't curse. Education, tuition costs, higher education, accessibility, and not predatory lending on student loans.
What are the personal qualities you'd want to see in a presidential candidate?
Again, really transparency and someone who has intelligent guts.
Someone who has good leadership, who can sort of help bridge the divide that, you know, the nation is at right now at the moment. But I don't know if that actually will ever happen, just because the nation is really divided, and I don't think it's something that's going to be very, very easy to do, especially in the next 4 years.
Well, everything has to do with the leadership, so ability to bring consensus, collaboration, have people work together. An element of empathy for sort of the have and have-nots, because the divide is so much greater than it has been in the past.
Someone who's a leader, someone who's got a vision, someone who recognizes the needs that we have domestically while maintaining some sort of positive outlook for our international future.
That was WVXU News Director Marianne Zalesnik talking with people at Carew Tower. We heard from Elin Sylander, Elizabeth Walcott, Tony Pierman, Kaylee Madden, Brittany Palmer, John Sandman, Charmaine Moore, and Carolyn Harshaw. This week, NPR and member stations are examining the state of mind of the American voter. And joining us to discuss the mood of voters this election year are University of Virginia Center for Politics Director of Communications and Sabatos Crystal Ball contributor Kyle Kondik, Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can be part of the discussion at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kyle, Karen, and Howard, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Certainly.
Glad to be here.
What do you think of what we just heard? Howard, let's start with you. What are your impressions?
Well, one thing that jumped out at me was the person who said they're looking for the quality of intelligent guts. And to me, that really says a lot, because I believe personally that in the end, you know, issues are obviously important in an election, but when it comes down to the final choice that a voter makes, it's about someone that they trust or believe can handle the job, can get the job done. And you heard that over and over again in the people that Marianne talked to, that, you know, they want that kind of competence and somebody with leadership abilities, and also someone who can bring others together, you know, work across the aisle.
Transparency was also the other word that you heard a lot.
Transparency, too.
Kyle, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, in terms of the transparency question, I kind of wonder how much the press kind of helps dictate what people are thinking about, because, you know, so much of the coverage of Hillary Clinton's campaign has been about her use of private emails, and I think the Clintons have just sort of this long history of maybe not being 100% truthful all the time. But I kind of wonder, Clinton can't really put that story behind her, and the fact that it gets so much coverage, I think, puts the idea in people's heads that that's something that maybe they should be thinking about. You know, as for the mood of the electorate, national polls always ask about whether the country is on the, quote, right track or wrong track. And really consistently for decades, most of the time, more people say wrong track than right track. But the gap between both of those numbers right now is really wide. At just 28% in the Real Clear Politics average think the country's on the right track. 64% think wrong track. That's generally bad for the party in power, in this case the Democrats. But even then, President Obama was able to get reelected in 2012, even though the right track, wrong track was going in the wrong direction for him. But it was the gap between the two was a lot smaller than it is now. So, you know, Americans seem pretty pessimistic right now, but I would say that they often feel pretty pessimistic about politics.
Kyle, do you think it also poses some problems for the Republicans, though, because you have the GOP in control of Congress?
You know, I don't think so. I think that if the people think that the country is going is not healthy and is on the wrong track, I think that Americans are so focused on the White House to the extent that they care about politics that I think that the president gets probably too much credit when things are going well and probably too much blame when they aren't. And that's kind of an inherent challenge, I think, for trying to win a third straight party term in the White House, as the Democrats are trying to do. But of course, you know, the identity of the Republican nominee is as yet unknown, and they have a lot of potentially problematic choices. I'll just leave it at that.
Karen, what are your thoughts on what you heard?
Well, it's interesting. Gallup does a monthly poll, and their monthly poll for January did indicate that dissatisfaction with government was the leading issue that people were citing as the most important issue for them. But it was only 16%. And all the other issues got even less than that. I mean, the economy in general, 13%, terrorism, 9%, immigration, 8%. You finally got down to things like the wage gap that you heard about in that piece, and ISIS in Iraq, and healthcare and education, drugs, Social Security, all these things were even below 5%. So it really does show that people, I think, are a little bit fractured about what are their most important issues and where they stand on these. And this whole idea of coalescing behind one candidate who fulfills all their needs, I mean, I think a lot of people are really starting to figure out that there is no one candidate that will do everything that I want. Who is the candidate who would do most of what I want? And I think that's what some people have been struggling in terms of trying to figure out who is that one candidate. And obviously Donald Trump seems to have gotten a lot of attention as a candidate that people are drawn to, who would resolve some of these issues and deal with that whole question of of leadership, that whole question of what a leader looks like and whether you can trust that person and that sort of thing. He seems to be drawing in a lot of people on that. I guess, though, you know, the thing I keep hearing about New Hampshire in particular is that New Hampshire voters take their time. They're not decided up until the last minute. And so I think we'll know a lot more next week after in New Hampshire, or after Iowa, rather, and then New Hampshire. You know, I think these are going to be as big of first votes as there ever have been in the presidential contest.
You know, the numbers that Karen cites are very interesting, and they're very telling, too, because all of these are important issues, but none of them are just overwhelming with voters. And I've always believed this when I look at polls, that one of the most important, if not the most important question in a political poll is, does this candidate, he or she, care about people like me? And if they have positive numbers on that, that is going to help immensely in getting someone elected.
Howard, do you think that there's some of the frustration that we're seeing among voters is perhaps because they're not getting the sense that there is anybody out there that really cares?
That's one of the problems, yeah. And, I mean, I think, you know, Trump to a certain extent has gotten that, but Trump has also gotten more what they call free media, in other words, media coverage, than any candidate probably in the history of American politics. I mean, he's on 24 hours a day. You can turn on TV and find Donald Trump.
Go ahead, Karen.
Who else gets almost every speech that they make carried live?
Exactly,
I mean,
yeah.
It's extraordinary when you consider how much attention he is getting. Howard's absolutely right.
Or call in to the Sunday shows instead of showing up.
Not even show up, call in.
Right.
Kyle, yeah.
He plays by different rules than the other candidates, and that, part of that is definitely the media's fault.
Yes, absolutely.
Because they let him get away with stuff that other candidates don't get away with.
Absolutely,
Kyle. If you're going to come up with some words to assess the mood of the voters, the mood of the electorate, what would some of your key words be?
Well, you know, one I think might be depressed, because I don't know if either party is super excited about their field of presidential candidates. I mean, I think for Democrats, I don't know if Clinton or Bernie Sanders really measures up to Obama. And obviously, there's a lot of confusion right now on the Republican side. But you know, you have someone who's leading all the polls in Trump, and you know, a big part of the party just can't stand him and doesn't even think he's a Republican. Mm-hmm. And you know, you wonder. I mean, people go nuts about third party possibilities every 4 years, and they very rarely develop. But one wonders if you had, you know, Clinton v. Trump or something, or Sanders versus Trump or something like that. One wonders if you would have a third party candidate. You wouldn't expect that person really to win any states, but maybe that person could affect the outcome. Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, is often mentioned. I actually think he probably hurt Clinton more than the Republican, because even though he was elected as a Republican in New York City, he's functionally a Democrat. He's liberal on a lot of cultural issues.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining me to discuss the mood of voters this election year are University of Virginia Center for Politics Director of Communications and Sabato's Crystal Ball contributor Kyle Condick, Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Kyle Condick's book, The Bellwether, Why Ohio Picks the President, is going to be published this June by Ohio University Press. Let us know what your thoughts are about this 2016 election, 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Howard, what do you think? How much of what we're seeing, how much of this frustration and discontent is just plain old anti-establishment feelings?
Well, there is a lot of that. I mean, I think it's frustration over things like gridlock in Washington, you know, the gridlock in Congress, dissatisfaction with some of the administration in Washington. And people are just, you know, they're ready for a change, but I'm not sure what change they want.
Kyler, Karen, you want to weigh in on that as well? How much of this is just fueled by being anti-establishment?
You know, there's some interesting polling that really tells the difference between the two parties. If you ask Republicans what kind of presidential candidate they want, do they want someone who's going to pursue compromise? Do they want someone who is connected to their own leadership? You know, Republicans in polling prefer an outsider. They don't like their own party's leadership. They don't want someone who's going to compromise. And Democrats, it's basically exactly the opposite. The Democrats are more open to, they're more supportive of their own party's leadership, and they want a candidate who favors compromise over principles. It's a good reason why Hillary Clinton, I think, still remains a pretty strong favorite to win her party's nomination, despite the Bernie Sanders insurgency, but also why Republicans seem somewhat inclined to not pick someone who is affiliated with the party leadership, be it Trump or yeah. Ted Cruz.
Yeah, and Republican voters right now, I mean, they are not happy with their own party. There's a lot of division in the party, and it does create an opportunity for a Donald Trump or a Cruz.
Well, and I think what's interesting here is if that's true, if that's what they're looking for, then to watch Governor Kasich, John Kasich right now
yeah,
is
right.
in the poll of polls showing up at about third behind Trump at 32% and Cruz at a little under 13%. Kasich is right there at 12%. So if indeed it is true, I mean, he's really run a campaign that really stresses his experience in Washington, his experience here in Ohio, that he's an outsider, but not an outsider. He's an outsider with experience. I think that's kind of the way that he's been positioning himself. And so if indeed, and he keeps talking about how he wants to talk to Democrats. He's worked with Democrats here in Ohio. Democrats in Ohio, of course, have different things to say about that.
Yes.
But, you know, I think if indeed that's what people, if they're telling pollsters that's what they want and they actually go and vote for that, then I think Kasich could pull into, you know, keep that third place or maybe pull into second place and certainly be in the lead in this pack of moderates with Rubio and Bush and Christie.
Yeah, it's really extraordinary to watch somebody like Kasich campaigning in New Hampshire as basically a guy that has experience in Washington getting things done, House Budget Chairman, Armed Services Committee, all the things. You know, he goes around bragging about that.
He's not running for the fact that he's part of the establishment.
No, he's not running away from Washington. Everybody else is running away from Washington or calling Washington names. Kasich is saying, look, I can do this job because I have been there and I know how it works.
Now, it's interesting.
You know, it's amazing about the Kasich candidacy is that when Kasich won the governorship in 2010, Tom Suttis, who my former professor at Ohio University and a Cleveland Plain Dealer columnist who knows more about Ohio politics than maybe anyone, he talked about how Kasich was probably the most conservative governor, or the most conservative person elected governor of Ohio in half a century.
Mm-hmm.
And yet now, and I think that was probably right at the time, and yet now, Kasich is probably seen as the least conservative person in the Republican primary field, and I think he's done that specifically to target New Hampshire, which has a more moderate electorate than many of the other states. And it's just interesting how the, you know, the center of the Republican Party has really moved right for someone like Kasich, who is not really a moderate, to be seen by many as kind of a moderate.
You know, Kasich isn't buying into the idea of the angry voter either, Kyle. He said in New Hampshire a few days ago, contrary to what we hear, they're not angry. He says that voters are just upset that things are not going well for them. But what they really want to hear is answers, and they want to get hope from the candidate. You think he's – what do you think of that position?
Well, you know, it's possible that part of the problem with trying to handicap this Republican field is that, you know, there's typically a candidate, or there are typically several candidates who appeal to kind of the far right and the religious conservatives. Ted Cruz has kind of like won that piece of the primary. He's, you know, guys like Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum, who've done well with those voters in the past, aren't doing really anything in this race. Trump takes from all the ideological wings of the Republican Party. He does a little bit better with moderates, but that's really not that big of a difference. And then you've got this big block of candidates who are competing for the kind of the moderate to somewhat conservative vote, those are the voters who often select and end up selecting the nominee of the party. And you've got that group, the group support split amongst a number of candidates. Kasich is one of them. You know, it's possible that, you know, someone of the you know, John Kasich and Chris Christie and Jeb Bush, and maybe you put Marco Rubio in there too, one of them or two of them have to do well in New Hampshire, and one or two of them will not do well. And once some of those candidates start to fall by the wayside, the person who remains may gather a lot of support. You know, it still could be John Kasich, even though it may be likelier to be one of the others.
That group that you just mentioned, Kyle, Kasich, Rubio, Christie, are they more, maybe more Bush. Pragmatists than, and Bush, are they maybe more pragmatists than the other Republican candidates?
Yeah, potentially. I think they're running that way. But, you know, it's interesting, the divisions in the party. I mean, if you look at domestic policy, you know, maybe Cruz is the most conservative of the bunch, but, you know, Rubio and Bush, for instance, seem more hawkish on foreign policy than Cruz or Trump. There's a lot of interesting splits in the field, to the point where, you know, you say, you know, Cruz is the most conservative, but maybe not on all the issues, and Trump is not really ideological at all. And so the ideological divisions in the party are kind of hard to figure out, at least, you know, amongst all the issues.
It's very hard to figure out. I mean, even now in the last few days, Trump has started talking about, you know, I can get along with everybody. I can get along with Democrats and liberals, and I can, you know, I'm, and he's kind of repositioning himself. As he would have to do if he became the nominee of the party. Yeah. He hasn't called anybody names in several days.
Really?
Yeah. Except for Ted Cruz.
Except
he's
for
still,
Ted Cruz.
I think
Cruz.
He's
yeah,
still calling Ted right. Cruz names. Yeah.
You're right.
Exactly. That's his closest competition. So.
Yes. And to his credit, I mean, Donald Trump has...
Go right ahead, Karen.
Go ahead, Karen.
Oh, well, I was just going to say it's interesting, you know, to his credit, and maybe this is something that endears him to some voters. Donald Trump made it pretty clear that he did not attack Ted Cruz until his poll numbers started threatening Donald Trump's poll numbers. Yeah. So, you know, at least he was honest about, I really didn't care what Ted Cruz was doing until he started moving up in the polls. And that's just, I think that there, if voters are concerned about transparency and honesty, well, it doesn't get much more honest than that, right?
Right. Karen, I'm curious, because you've covered Governor Kasich for so long. What do you think of the position he's been staking out in New Hampshire in terms of, you know, oh, the voters aren't really angry. They're looking for somebody who'll lead them. They're looking for answers. So is that just typical of the way Kasich conducts himself?
I think he's sent that message for a while. I don't think he really is trying to tap into that whole, quote, angry voter thing. I mean, a lot of what we see on the campaign trail from Kasich is vintage Kasich, but a lot of it is confusing to people who cover him on a regular basis. I mean, he's been a lot more accessible, I think, to reporters up there than he ever has been in Ohio. He's been more willing to take questions, more off the cuff, more accessible, but that's what you have to be, I think, when you're doing the so-called retail politics where you're going door-to-door shaking hands and doing 75 town hall meetings. You have to be more accessible. And so it's been very, very interesting to watch Kasich. And, you know, I mentioned the Democrats in Ohio. A lot of them are really, some of them will even laugh when you say that he is the moderate in this group, because they will tell you Kasich is not a moderate at all. And so, you know, they've been gathering their ammunition in case Kasich does become the nominee to express that he is not a moderate. But in this group, he sure appears to be sometimes.
Yeah, Karen, you and I both know, we've seen the Kasich who is my way or the highway.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we talked about this before, but, you know, you read some of the profiles in the national news media of Kasich and descriptions of him, and you wonder, as an Ohio reporter who's covering him, who are they talking about here?
Well, and
who's this guy they're talking about?
The early ones that right after he announced back in July,
right,
the early
yeah.
ones were about, you know, how prickly he is, and,
right,
and he's
exactly.
he's brusque and gruff and you know, all these other words that basically described his somewhat, you know, he's got
a
way.
Now he's the happy warrior.
He's the Prince of Light and Hope or whatever. You know, that's what he called himself.
Exactly.
And so it really has been an amazing transformation.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. Are you feeling optimistic or pessimistic about where we're headed and the choices we have for president? 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Kyle, I'm kind of curious what you think about this. Somebody who's expressed their discontent lately has been Michael Bloomberg. You mentioned him earlier. And I have seen several stories lately that say that he's not happy with Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side or Donald Trump on the Republican side. So he's thinking of running as an independent candidate. What's your thought on that?
You know, what's interesting about Bloomberg is that in some ways he has the classic profile of a person who gets mentioned as a third-party candidate, at least kind of amongst the East Coast, you know, establishment, because he's basically liberal on social issues. He's a manager. You know, he's kind of probably middle of the road economically. But I actually kind of think that, you know, the true voters in the United States that might actually be open to a third-party candidate are basically exactly the opposite kinds of voters who might support a Michael Bloomberg. You have a lot of maybe what you'd consider to be Reagan Democrats, kind of socially conservative voters, probably white voters, who also are not necessarily very economically conservative. I think they're kind of the voters that Trump is appealing to, voters that you might find in Southeast Ohio, for instance, or West Virginia or Kentucky. This is why the prospect of a Trump third party candidacy, which probably isn't going to happen now, it might be almost too late for it, that would almost be more interesting because there might be more of a natural base for that kind of, almost Reagan Democrat kind of candidate than a, you know, billionaire, the billionaire former New York City mayor. Maybe it's the, you know, the billionaire businessman is more appealing than the former mayor.
You think that Bloomberg might actually run, though, as an independent?
I don't know. I mean,
he's talked about this before.
If Trump were the Republican nominee, I really do think he would hurt Hillary Clinton more than he would hurt
Yes.
Trump, in which case does he really want to be somewhat responsible for making Trump president, potentially?
It's like John Anderson in 1980, you know, a liberal Yeah. Republican ended up hurting Jimmy Carter more than, you know.
Yeah.
That's right.
Again,
I just, you know, sometimes you look at this race and you think, is this some sort of just long experiment in, you know, because every election has always been, this is the most important election that we're ever going to have. I mean, we've heard that kind of said basically since Bill Clinton was elected. And this one just has the potential to be just to blow the system completely apart. We've talked about brokered conventions and we've talked about, you know, a third party billionaire candidate, somebody who could legitimately spend his own money and compete with the other two candidates, which we've never really had before. Even Ross Perot didn't put up as much money as the other two candidates in that race. This could be, this is just kind of, it's either a political junkie's dream or nightmare, depending on your point of view. Yeah.
So Karen, you would agree that this is an unusual election that we're looking at?
This is the
unusual,
most
yes.
extraordinary. I mean, you know, I haven't been covering this as long as some people, but my gosh, I've been watching this since I was, you know, in high school, and this is just extraordinary.
You know, Howard, I've seen and I've heard countless stories about the angry voter, and it's not a new theme. It pops up. You know. But is this election really any different as far as you're concerned in looking at it? Is it any different than in years past?
Well, I don't know that it's that much different. I mean, I think there are always voters who are angry, at least initially. I think in the end, you know, people tend to calm down and start looking at things differently and say, okay, you know, is this person that I'm backing capable of doing this job? Is he the right person? Does he have the right temperament? And it gets back to that question that I raised earlier that I look for on all the polls. Does he or she care about people like me?
When does that happen? When do the voters get to that rational state, Howard? Or is it, as Karen says, well, endless?
No, they do. They do, but it's not now. Okay.
No.
It's more towards the end.
Kyle, what do you think?
I think Howard's probably onto something with that. It might take Trump winning, you know, New Hampshire or Iowa or both. And then, you know, maybe the prospect of the nomination becomes more real, and Republicans start to maybe grapple with that in a more serious way. But, you know, maybe the guy gets nominated. I mean, you know, he has been. I mean, if his name was Jeb Bush and he had his poll, you know, he had this kind of polling, everyone would just assume that he'd be the nominee. And yet there's still some. I feel like maybe the burden of proof for him is a little bit higher, and it probably should be. To see if he can actually translate that polling into actual support. You know, we don't know what kind of ground operation he's going to have, for instance, in Iowa, where, you know, it can be kind of hard to get people to actually show up to vote. You know, we're finally going to have some real data as opposed to just polls on that, you know, starting on Monday.
Yeah, and Iowa is all about ground game and being able to organize and get people to come out maybe on a blizzard night, you know, to some school gymnasium that's
for hours.
Yeah, for hours
and
hours. Right.
Yeah. But if I'm so angry, I don't want to go out on a cold blizzard night and wait for hours and hours and hours. I mean, is this going to have an impact on people turning out for the primaries?
It could. Yeah, sure.
Or maybe it's motivation.
If you are a candidate who does not have the organization on the ground to get out the vote effort, then yes, absolutely it could. And that shows up most pronounced in caucus situations like Iowa. And
go ahead,
I would
Karen.
Just add that, you know, this whole idea of an angry voter, you know, we hear about that, I think, a lot of times in elections where you have the attitude of throw the bums out. You know, I wanted a brand new Congress, all this kind of stuff. But then when it comes down to an actual vote, a lot of people will still vote for their particular representative or senator. Mm-hmm. They will keep their guy because their guy is not the problem, you know.
Right.
And so I think that whole idea of an angry voter, who are you really angry at, will make a difference here.
Well, one other thing, too, is that the profile of both the Trump voter and also the Bernie Sanders voter is the more unreliable voters in primaries. Your primary turnout is never particularly all that high. Maybe it will be higher this time. Maybe Sanders and Trump, for instance, will get their voters out. Or it may be that some of these polls are kind of overestimating what the likely turnout is going to be, in which case Sanders and Trump probably wouldn't do as well as their polls suggest.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. NPR and member stations this week are delving into the state of mind of the American voter. And joining us this afternoon are University of Virginia Center for Politics Director of Communications and Sabato's Crystal Ball contributor Kyle Condick, Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Tyler in Dayton joins us now. Hi, Tyler.
Here is probably the weirdest political quandary you've ever heard in your entire life. I like Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders at the same time.
Okay, all right.
And no wonder there's so much frustration.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that's some reaching across the aisle, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you go first.
I was just curious. You've just been paying attention to both of them, and you like what each one is saying and the positions each one is staking out?
Well, more or less, I actually really love pretty much everything Bernie Sanders is saying. He's, you know, I've been a lifelong Democrat, and that is by far the best example of socialism we could possibly ask for. But at the same time, socialism implies that you've got to give up something to get something, you know? So that would mean, like, we're going to have a bigger government and more taxes in order to make sure that everyone gets medical care and goes to college. So I have mixed feelings about that.
So you see, Cruz is maybe the balancing act here, as the one who would balance. Okay.
Maybe Cruz, you know, just because he's a constitutional expert, a congressional scholar, And, you know, the two of them have about the equal amount of clout in Congress. But just for those reasons, I don't see him really being the type to just go ahead and just mess up the American people like, say, Jeb Bush probably would, or Donald Trump probably would.
Hey, Tyler.
He would be a... I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to ask you, if you don't mind, what age group are you in?
What age group?
College age. What? Yeah, are you college age
just
or
not in college?
Okay. Well, your dream ticket's going to be Cruz and Sanders.
Okay.
Tyler.
No,
it wouldn't be your dream ticket.
I don't even think I have a dream ticket. It's just, like I said, my only issue with Bernie Sanders is that I flat out don't trust the American government.
Yeah.
Okay, but those are two candidates who appeal to you.
And
for
this is interesting.
Reasons.
Yeah.
Oh, completely different reasons, but yeah.
Okay.
Tyler, thank you so much. We appreciate the phone call. That's interesting. Karen and Kyle, we have a Cruz Sanders.
I've actually heard some people talk about how they like Bernie Sanders. They like Donald Trump. They like the idea of somebody who kind of speaks his mind and says what he thinks and doesn't seem mm-hmm. beholden to any of the big money interests and that sort of thing. So I'm not completely surprised. I mean, Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders couldn't be more opposite, I guess, politically. But I think their approach in this campaign has been kind of similar.
Yeah.
Sometimes on some issues, the far left and the far right can kind of make common cause. And the one that comes up to me is actually foreign policy, because while Ted Cruz talks like a hawk a lot of the times, if you read between the lines of what he says, he doesn't seem like someone who thinks that the Iraq war was a good idea. And
yeah,
certainly Bernie Sanders didn't think it was a good idea. And that's part of the reason I think why the so-called Republican establishment doesn't really like Cruz. I mean, they don't like him for a lot of reasons, one of which is he just seems like personally very difficult to deal with, and that's been, many people have said that about him. But also the Republican Party is the party of hawks, and Cruz in some ways is not much of a hawk, and even someone like Rand Paul is even less of a hawk.
Awesome,
and,
yeah.
And you won't find much support from GOP leadership people for either of those candidates.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's go to Lynn in Northern Kentucky. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yes.
I'm listening with amusement here on the side of the road. First of all, I want to say one thing about Trump and one thing about Kasich, okay?
Okay.
I'm quite educated, and I like Trump, and I get tired of being dismissed as an angry white, low-educated male, yeah. Older male or mm-hmm. middle-aged male. And I think it's the oldest political trick in the book to demean someone's support by attempting to associate it with what might be perceived as a lesser class. I think there's a lot of closet college people out there who like Trump, but I do want to say my liking of him has to do with his honesty, as your female speaker had just said.
Transparencies.
I don't think he has anything...
Yeah, transparency is a big deal to you. Okay.
Right. And tell Tyler not to vote for Cruz, because I'm a retired attorney, and it takes one to know one. He likes to brag about his 9 cases before the Supreme Court. He won 2 of them. So,
snap.
Yeah. But coming around your female speaker again, I came into the program late, so I didn't get people's names.
Karen Kassler, yeah.
You know, as far as Kasich goes, I'm a transplant from a big city, and I'm totally amazed that all his good press is coming from the Ohio papers, which are syndicated, so those poor New Hampshire voters only see these glowing reports on him, and I'm thinking, he's such a pompous jerk, how is this even happening? But I think if he does win the nominee, Kasich, it would be by default, and it's my understanding that's how he won his reelection.
Well, there is that argument. I mean, his reelection was definitely because in many ways the Democratic candidate imploded, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so when he does talk about how he overwhelmingly won reelection in Ohio, there's an asterisk right along with that.
He was running against a terrible, terrible candidate.
Well, You could say that a lot. I'm not going to say that. But there were.
Well, you know, I just did. So he was. He was a bad candidate.
You know, Howard and Karen could probably speak to this better than I can, but I've gotten a sense from day one of his national campaign that the national press has been more bullish and liked Kasich more than the Ohio press.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, no question about it.
And I mean, because in some ways I think that the national press will gravitate toward the person who maybe seems the most reasonable and maybe seems the most moderate. And again, Kasich is not really moderate, but he is in comparison to some of the other Republicans. And I remember when Kasich got in the race, he got a number of pretty glowing national magazine profiles. And I think, you know, that was part of the reason was that he was explicitly not trying to run a hard-edged conservative campaign.
And he can also be very entertaining and charming and I mean, you know, he can walk into a room and joke with people and you know, people will walk away and like him.
And I think, you know, when he's on and he can certainly work a room, but he can also sometimes when he's trying to make jokes and cracking jokes in the wrong crowd, he can really come off as really out of touch and not understanding who his audience is. And so, he can go either way. But I think it's, you know, for a long time, I think there was this perception that Kasich was going to drop out early, that, you know, the national media didn't have to pay a whole lot of attention to him because he didn't have the staying power. He was going to lose to Bush or whatever. He's proven that he's here at least until New Hampshire and says that he's going as long as he possibly can. So,
real quick, Howard, your thoughts on this? Pretty soon, this presidential roadshow is going to end up arriving in Ohio.
Yes.
Well, what's that going to be like?
Well, I mean, there's a whole lot that has to happen between now and then. I mean, there's, you know, like 10 states that have primaries on March 1st. We're on March 15th. You know, it's going to be competitive here. And I mean, they're going to be, you know, you would have to think that Kasich would have an advantage here. And the Republican side is winner take all. You know, you win the state, you get all the delegates. Democratic side, it's proportional. So, you know, even if Hillary Clinton wins the state and wins most of the congressional districts, Sanders would be likely to pick up some delegates from Ohio.
Okay. Well, Karen and Kyle and Howard, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's been great. Thanks.
Thank you.
University of Virginia Center for Politics Director of Communications and Sabato's Crystal Ball contributor Kyle Kondik, Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Kyle Kondik's book, The Bellwether, Why Ohio Picks the President, will be published this June by Ohio University Press. And this week, Ken Rudin and Howard are going to be joining us again on Thursday for more political analysis on Cincinnati Edition. So be sure to join us for that.